Hello and welcome to One Inch Past Gary podcast. This is Christy Sayer and I am so excited to be with you. I am sitting out in my gazebo with some very busy bumblebees accompanying me. So if you hear them, cheer them on. I feel like I just spoke to you. This week has gone so incredibly quickly. The long, lazy days of summer are something of a myth, I think. For me, they go really quickly because they're so much more pleasant than the cold days of winter. But something that has been long lately have been my runs. I have been working up my mileage, and so I've been having more long runs than usual. And I always find that the long runs give me a sense of a great sense, many analogies for life, and they really are a metaphor for life. I found that every time I've done a race or I've run a really long distance, what happened during the time that I was running or leading up to it was really indicative of where my headspace was at the time, where I was, what I, you know, how I was thinking, how I was perceiving the world and myself. And it's really interesting to see how, you know, those things informed the quality of the run or how good the experience was and all that. But what I really want to talk to you about today is some of the things that I feel like I learn on a run that are so just so obviously applicable to everyday life. And so I guess what this episode is going to be sort of subtitled will be I Run Far So You Don't Have To. So then I'll tell you about the things that I've learned, that I learn on my long runs. And honestly, nothing is earth-shattering. You know, none of these things are going to probably blow your mind. But I found that even when I was considering today what I was going to say, you know, preparing in my mind for this podcast, I couldn't bring to mind any of the long list of things that I'd come away with on my run, which was literally just, I think it was yesterday. I did my long run yesterday. I was thinking maybe it was on Sunday, but so today's Tuesday and I did it yesterday morning. And that's hilarious. It feels like so much longer ago. But I scribbled right when I was done and the blood was still pumping and all the thoughts were still in my mind and all those good hormones were happening. I had a notebook in my car, and I got home and I was still in the car, I scribbled down what I had thought of on the run. And just today, a day later, when I was trying to bring to mind, you know, organizing this in my mind, okay, what will I think about, and trying to sort of recall what I've written down, honestly, nothing was coming to mind. And so it's so weird how quickly we forget things that we honestly think we won't. I'm sure if very much pressed, I could have recalled some of the things. But it's really useful, as an aside, to write things down as they happen. If you have a really memorable experience or something really rings true to you and you think, you know, I really need to remember this for future reference, this will help me in the future, I need to remember how I felt right now, write it down, because even if you think you have a memory like a steel trap, it's really helpful to have those written cues, which are always slightly different, at least, than the way you recall them. And there's nuance and things like that that you won't necessarily recall. And sometimes you're not even thinking about it and you come across it in your notebook and you're like, this is exactly what I needed to read. I can't believe this was me saying these things. I can do this. I can dig deep. Or I learned this before. I've been here before and I totally forgot that I was here before and I got through it. And so I really, really recommend, and I need to be so much better about this myself. And I am somewhat of a faithful historian and recorder of things, but I could be a lot better in writing down things as they happen, and they, and you know, if they seem profound to you, or if you've learned something from them, keep a notebook with you all the time and just write down little cues. So all that said, I'm going to go through the list of things that came to mind on this run that I thought were really relevant to my life. And I think, you know, everybody can take at least one or two of these things away. And, you know, this is not because I'm so wise and I'm the only person who, you know, has deep thoughts while they're running. I feel like we've all experienced these things. We've all learned these things from time to time. But this serves as a reminder, and maybe just to jolt your thinking, or help you to go a little deeper into, you know, maybe you've experienced this in your own life, and reminding you about, you know, when you have, just like I said before, you know, reminding you that you've been able to dig deep before, you've encountered problems before that have seemed insurmountable, but they absolutely weren't. Okay, so rule number one, most important epiphany of this particular long run, and what I really gave a lot of thought to, was your ego, left unchecked, can only hurt you on a run, in life, in relationships, in anything. Your ego will harm you. The smaller that you can shrink the ego, the better off you'll be, the safer you'll be, the less injured you'll be in every aspect of your life. And so as an example for running, you know, I've seen this so many times, and I've been there so many times that, you know, the way I am built is that I can run long, but not particularly fast. And I have, well, not fast at all. I don't know why I say not particularly fast, not fast, but long and strong. So I run long, and I am a really slow to warm. I am a slow twitch muscle kind of girl. So I'm not a sprinter. I am more of a plodder. I can go forever, but it takes a while to warm up. So, and I'm what runners will recognize. What I'm saying is that I will tend to run negative splits, which means you run the first miles slower than you run the last miles. And that serves me perfectly well, and it's all good. When I am not taken over by the ego. So it works out fine when I'm in my training runs, and I do very poorly in races as a rule. Because what happens? Well, when I'm training alone and nobody's watching me, I'm perfectly satisfied. I know how I am, and that I start slow, and it's always agonizing for the first 3 miles or so. I really don't enjoy it. And then everything warms up, and then, you know, things feel better, and I can get a little bit faster. But in a race situation, I am right there, everybody's getting ready to start, and people take off because it's a race. And a lot of people do really well in races because of, you know, they have that extra adrenaline. And so, you know, most people actually race faster than they train, which is really the goal. But I almost always do more poorly in my races than I do in my training. Why? Because I let my ego get in the way. And so instead of doing what is tried and true for me, I, think, oh my hell, all these people are watching me start so slow. And, you know, races tend to start with obviously a bang, sometimes even with fireworks. It's great. And everybody takes off. There's a lot of adrenaline, and you know, I guess most of them are faster than me anyway. So, you know, they take off and they continue to go fast and maybe finish fast. I don't know, but people tend to start out races faster than they should. And this is a very big no-no for me. I have got to not do that, because that's not how my body works. And if I burn out, you know, if I burn out when it's not warmed up, it's just going to end really badly down the road. And the stronger my ego is yelling at me, the more poorly I do, because I go against everything I know that I've learned over since I was 17 years old. And there you go. And it happens even when I'm alone. Sometimes I will be having a I will be feeling good, running along, doing my thing, look down at my watch and see my pace. And it was supposed to be an easy run, right? It was supposed to, it's some, lots of runs when you're training for long distances are just about flipping, getting in the miles, right? You're not timing yourself obsessively, you're just getting in the miles. And that's always my goal going out for this kind of run. And then I'll look down and I'll see, what's this? So slow. This will not do. And it's so silly because I know in the back of my mind, that's fine. Like, this isn't about that. But I'm like, I'm going to see this pace at the end and it's going to feel so crap because this is not my pace. This is not how I go. Ah, cue the cicadas. And I'm like, what are you trying to prove? Who are you trying to prove this to? Well, I just, you know, and this is the internal dialogue. I don't want to see that I'm getting slower. What's this? This is not my kind of pace. This is the pace of slower people than me. It's just crazy. And it's this ego screaming. And so then for no reason at all, on a run that's supposed to be an easy run or a recovery run, because I looked down at my watch and the ego was screaming that day, I will pick up the pace, which is just a terrible idea, because if it was supposed to be a recovery run, it jeopardizes the next run. And or, you know, I don't finish strong, or I risk injury, or I get injured. It's every single damn time. You let the ego speak more than the wisdom and the self, the knowing self that knows what's best for you. It is like, this is what I set out to do, and this is the goal here. The goal is not to impress anybody. The goal, and you know, we all have different goals in athletic pursuits. But mine, when I'm, you know, in my purest self, is it's enjoyable and it's a challenge, and I like to see what I can do, but it is a challenge for me. It's not a challenge to impress other people. It's not a challenge to beat other people. In fact, when I've had really good races, I'll get the stats later and I'll be like, and then they'll say, you passed so many people, and I'll be, what's this? And I'll realize, oh yes, it was a race. Other people were involved. I'm honestly sort of taken aback. Like, what is this that they're saying? I was passed by this many people passed me. I was like, oh, that's right. This is a race, you know, because I find that when you're at my level, which is, you know, strictly very, very amateur, you are honestly just doing it for yourself, for the experience of it. I've maybe done two of them where I've been really preoccupied with time, and I'm usually just doing it to finish. So, and I find that works out a lot better for me. So, you know, the ego, I found it trying to sneak in several times on my last run. I was looking at my pace. I wasn't liking it. The thing is, I see people in races who, it's so sad to see, because I will see them, you know, you pass people, sometimes there's stretches of road where you're kind of alone, and then you'll see somebody and they're hobbling and they're having a hard time, and they obviously need to take a break or walk it out or whatever. And they'll be sort of limping along, nursing whatever it is that's going on with them, and that might actually be able to be worked out with a couple of minutes of walking. And then they'll see you approaching and they'll look over their shoulder at you and they'll start to run, like, faster than they should be. And you can tell they're hurting themselves more. Now I just want to say, stop it. I am not worth it. Trust me, I am not worth it. This passing person whose name you don't know, who will never see you again, who, like, doesn't recognize you or doesn't care, is not worth what you're busy doing to yourself. You're jeopardizing the rest of the race. You're jeopardizing your running future. And the hardest thing to do, the most painful and awkward and cringy thing, is when you see people who are older and should know better doing this. Because we all hope that as we get older, right, we will evolve where that doesn't matter. And I get so like, oh my word, this is super sad when I see somebody older than I, you know, obviously being tortured by their ego. And here I am, not cutting an intimidating athletic figure at all, making this person who's significantly older than I feel insecure enough that they should run and hurt themselves, and maybe, you know, and no race is worth, you know, your running future. I really believe that. So it's just, I find that really discouraging, and I really try to remember that for myself when the ego is talking too loudly. I'm like, Christy, do you want to get this under control now, or do you want to be 20 years from now looking over your shoulder and running for the sake of some stranger and hurting yourself? Like, don't be that person. That's crazy. So that applies to literally everything in life. When we're doing things for the sake of our image, to look good, or to live up to some kind of crazy comparative expectation that we might have of ourselves, that it's just nonsense, we will only end up hurting ourselves, and we will only end up hurting our relationships, and we will, it's not a good look, apart from anything else. If you're concerned about your image, the irony is that the more concerned about your image you are, and the more your ego is screaming, the less impressive you tend to be to others. People really do respect authenticity, and people who are comfortable in their own skin and willing to own all their foibles and all their weaknesses. And so that's the irony, you know, just like when I see that person, I'm like, dude, I know what you're doing. And it's like, don't do that. You know, I've been there, and I hope not to be there in 20 years where you are. Like, you are entitled to walk. If you hurt, walk. There ain't no shame, my friend. I walk even when I'm not hurt, so that I don't get hurt. You know, if I start to feel twingy or tired, I instantly walk so that I can finish strong. So, yeah, your ego can only hurt you. And anything that we can do to work on getting our ego under control is time so well spent. Mine is big and large and loud, and I've really found that doing a meditation and really becoming conscious of why my ego is so screamy and what that's all about has been very helpful. And doing, you know, learning more about the ego and what it's about, and sort of studying that, and doing meditation and having intentions to address that, not in a like a condemnatory way, because we all have ego. It is what it is, you know. You don't have to hate yourself for it. But just learning how to manage it has really been helpful to me and transformative, and is giving me a lot more peace in my life when the ego is not screaming and dictating everything to me and how I should be and what I should look like and all that stuff. I'm feeling a ton more peace in my life, but it takes actually learning and being aware of it, and it comes out in unexpected places and unexpected ways. You know, I'm starting to learn that ego looks lots of different ways. So that's, if there's one nugget you take away, or that, you know, maybe you can think about or contemplate or look into, you know, doing this ego work along with me, that is it. That's the number one. The second one is, don't give in the moment things start to feel rough. Like I said, I start slow, everything's painful and icky at first, and if I stopped running the moment anything started to twinge, I don't think I would ever run more than a few yards. And ironically, I almost always feel better at the end of my runs than at the beginning. And, you know, I've learned over time that if I were to stop every time something started to feel achy or sore or niggly or whatever, I honestly wouldn't be a runner. I would get nowhere. And I think that this, as a personal trainer, I'm painfully aware of how people are truly, they really want to have the benefits of fitness and the benefits of daily exercise. They can see those benefits are amazing and they want that in their life, but then they experiment with it just a bit and they feel uncomfortable or in pain, or, you know, it's frightening almost, because they haven't experienced putting their body through that experience. before or putting their body through that particular kind of challenge, and they're like, this isn't for me. This is not for me. This is painful, and that shows that it's bad and wrong, and I'm not doing it. So then, you know, they have to prepare to invest a lot of time and money in doctors and all sorts of unenjoyable things down the road, which comes from, you know, a sedentary lifestyle. That's just kind of how it goes, unfortunately. And so I struggle with this every time. I'm like, is that something that I should be stopping for? And, you know, with time, when you exercise, you know, regularly, you know what is an ache and a pain and discomfort, and then you know what's an alarming kind of pain, what's a, like, nope, definitely stop, or definitely ease off, or like I said, in those runs, like those races that I see, it's time for you to walk it out, you know. But there's just times when it's just achy and sore, and I'm like, maybe I've just run too much already this week, or I'm just sore and I'm tired. And I have those thoughts practically every time. And if I didn't push through it, then I wouldn't have the triumph of ending a long run and increasing my fitness. So obviously there's something, if you feel like your hamstring's going or your Achilles tendon's about to pop, then obviously you got to stop. But those kind of aches and pains, and that's so applicable to life. Again, you know, every single thing that's worth doing, that's very rewarding in the end, requires that we push through tedium and low-grade pain and sometimes high-grade pain, you know. A lot of, I read a lot of books by authors about writing, you know, about the process of writing. And a lot of times people think, well, writers are artists, and so they're moved to write and they're inspired, and then they are, you know, the muse hits them just right, and they're, bam, it's all out there. They write the next great American novel. And that's not how it is. Writing is just as much of a discipline as running, and I think for almost everybody, you have got to be willing to sit there and stare at a blank document or a blank page and write rubbish until it becomes something useful every day. It's a discipline. And if you get righteous block, you've just got to write whatever happened to you that day, stream of consciousness. Just like everything. And relationships hit horrible rocky points. And if it's just uncomfortable and it's not working out and you guys have got conflict, and then, you know, are you going to give up on it, or you're going to see how you can adapt and change? And obviously, like I said, when things are very painful and alarming, it's different from when things are uncomfortable and challenging. So, you know, don't give up the moment things get uncomfortable. And that's very literally when it comes to exercise. I really like to put plugs in for exercise. I think a society is horribly trapped in a sedentary lifestyle, and that the consequences of that are horrible, just terrible and unnecessary. But it applies to everything worthwhile. Third, your fuel will make or break your run. And that is both literal in terms of how well hydrated you are, what kind of nutrition, you know, you've had that week leading up to it. But in this case, I'm actually thinking about thought fuel and what you've got going on in your mind. And that is so profoundly important. I find that I've started listening to podcasts, and I've been quite specific about which ones I'll listen to when I'm running. And the more challenging the run, the more specific and careful I am with what I choose. And I tend to choose, you know, the more challenging things are going to be. I choose podcasts which are really focused on the importance of personal responsibility, and that aren't, that, you know, teach and reiterate over and over again that, you know, we are not beholden to our circumstances or the story that we've experienced or the things we've been through or anything really. We have so many choices in life, and we have choices about what we'll think about from one moment to the next. And having been through PTSD, I don't want to be flippant about this, because I know that our minds can be very powerful and can trap us in terrible, horrible flashbacks and all that sort of thing. And I'm not talking about that, because that's different. But when we are sort of semi in control of things, we do have an option to switch the channel, and we do have an option to focus on what's in front of us, and we do have an option to go, what is good about the situation? What is a helpful thought right now? And is what I'm thinking right now, is this helpful to me? No. If I'm thinking about how much this hurts, is that helping me? Focusing on this muscle that hurts so much, how is that helpful? Perhaps. And so what I've actually, an exercise I've started to do, a mental exercise, and I think I heard Deepak Chopra did talk about doing this in India. He went on this, like, he walked around for days and days and was getting terrible blister. And he, you know, spoke to his guru about it and said, this is, like, incredibly painful. And the guru said, well, but isn't the foot that it's not blistered, doesn't it feel so pleasant to land on that foot? You know, isn't it so pleasant that that foot is pain-free? And I have honestly started to use that exercise when I have one leg that's acts up way more than the other. And when that starts to twinge, I am like, whoa, well, let me focus on how pain-free and how pleasurable it is when my right foot goes down versus my left foot. And it is incredible when I focus on that. Oh, this feels so good. I find I'm not bothered, and soon enough the pain actually even goes away, and or I get distracted and start thinking about something else entirely. So it's this simple little mental adjustments, and that kind of fuel, and those I used to listen to all kinds of music, and that was fun and everything, but then I found I was getting really bored, and I found that these podcasts have been so helpful in getting me to fall back in love with running. And the more positive and the more sort of focused on how many choices we, each of us, no matter what our story is, no matter what our circumstances are, do have in any single moment about what we focus on, has been such powerful fuel for me. And when I'm, you know, and when I allow my mind, though, to go off on negative tangents of, you know, or victimhood or feeling sorry for myself, or isn't this bad, or this, or isn't it so hot, or isn't it so bumpy, or isn't it so blistery, or whatever, I burn so much more energy. And so the thought fuel is everything, and it's everything for anything we do in our life. If we come into the kitchen and we see that the kids have trashed the place and you spent, you know, hours cleaning it, and everybody can relate to this probably, and you could focus, whoa, like, nobody respects or cares about what I do around here. This is, you know, I live with people who don't give a damn about what I do. I am so disrespected and unappreciated, and this was such a waste of my time, and all these dumb, defeating thoughts. Oh, you can look at it and go, oh, people ate in here and were preoccupied with their lives and went on, and I guess we're lucky we have food. I mean, you can go either way. Both of those things are true, and I, you know, that might sound Pollyanna-ish, but it's actually, okay, wait. When I said both of those things are true, that's nonsense. You don't know that, no, you know, it's not true that nobody respects me in my home. People respect me plenty. They just don't recognize how important it is to me that they, you know, that they show that respect through maintaining a clean kitchen. So what is real fact is that people ate in there. And you can focus on the facts. People ate in here, and then they got preoccupied with their own lives, and they walked out and left this. So what are we going to do now? Well, we can be grateful we have all this food, and I have these people to share it with, and they've got lives, and they're preoccupied with them. That's all great. And then I can call them back in here, and we can all clean up together in a moment. So I found that that has been really helpful because I can get myself into quite the resentful little lather, and that's not good for family relationships. It's not, certainly not good for me. And the outcome is, you know, it certainly doesn't clean the kitchen. All right. The next one is smile at people along the way, because I run a fairly small route. And so if I'm running long, I will pass people several ways. And if I smile at people and I make a connection with them, even if they seem really kind of in their own world and don't really seem friendly, I've noticed, you know, I made a commitment several months ago that I would smile and greet every single person that I passed. That was going to be the one thing I could do for the world at that point in my life. And I figured it was something I could do and I would do. And I wanted people to at least have one friendly interaction with somebody outside of who they knew a day. And I wanted, you know, if it was going to be me, it was going to be me. So I started doing that, and it wasn't particularly satisfying at first, because a lot of times people would just ignore me, or a couple of times kids pulled their tongue out at me. One kid gave me the finger when I greeted them. Several times I didn't get anything except I swallowed bugs because I was opening my mouth and running and saying hi and breathing in deeply. And anyway, whatever. I persisted with that. I'm glad I did, because I found that the longer I do it, the more return I'm getting on it. Those are the cicadas again. So if you like the sound of cicadas, I hope you're enjoying this. And if you don't, I'm sorry. But all that to say, when I have smiled at people, no matter how reclusive they seemed on the first round, if I bumped into them the next round, they always anticipated me coming and would greet me with a smile first, you know, or greet me and meet my eye when I was smiling at them. And often they would become invested in my run and be, you know, if they were on a walk or if they were sitting on a bench or whatever, and they'd be like, "You're doing great," or "Keep it up." And that's encouraging. It's nice to have that sense of camaraderie. And so, you know, it's a very obvious kind of connection to life. If you find that, you know, people along your way in life are just, you know, you're just ships passing in the night, you're not meeting people's eye in, you know, your everyday, stop doing that. You know, we can all be so much more encouraging to each other. We can make this world feel so much safer and so much more welcoming just by meeting people's eye and saying hi as we pass by. And it makes a really profound difference. And in time, you get that positive feedback. You know, I have received so much encouragement. I have found people become so kind and will go out of their way to like congratulate me at the end and be like, "You've been running forever. This is so awesome." Like, you know, and it's, you know, I feel like I have friends and cheerleaders out there some days, and it's really nice. It's just nice to make human connections. So in life, might I suggest that if, you know, you tend to keep your head down and not greet people and not meet people in the eye, just start experimenting with moving out of that comfort zone just a little bit, because it's very rewarding if we persist. It might not always turn out perfect, but it's a service you can do for the world, and in time it really does start to come back to you. I'm trying to wrap this up, and I've listed several things, and I want to just pick one because I want to keep this kind of short. All right. I'm going to choose this one. The more mileage you run, the more rest you require. And that seems so obvious, but I mean, I didn't actually connect the dots to this. I didn't connect the dots that I would need more sleep every night when I was doing more. And how can this connect to life? Well, you know, if you really want to be productive in your life, you've got to a lot of times I see these motivational speakers are like, you don't need to sleep so much, you need 4 hours sleep, well, and you know, sleep less than everybody else, and then you'll have the you'll have the results that they don't have. And I'm just like, please don't listen to that. Those people might be freaks of nature who can get away with 4 hours of sleep, but for most of us, it's just a disaster in the making. It's really bad for your body, for your mind, for everything. It's super bad for your well-being to cut short sleep. And I think when people are trying to achieve a lot in their life, they kind of cut corners on self-care, and self-care has become such a overused expression, and it's all about really, really kind of indulgent things that not everybody has time or money or interest in. But I'm talking about sleeping. I'm talking about, you know, getting adequate rest. And the more you're going for your goals, any kind of goals, the more you need to recognize that you also, you have to be balanced with the amount of care that you give yourself. So if you're really gunning for something big, recognize that you are going to need to replenish those, that energy, that, you know, recharge those batteries. And sleep is incredibly important, and I haven't recognized that for most of my life, but I've started to make sleep quite a big priority, which is really new for me, and it's made a ton of difference in my life. It's really important for everything, and if you don't take it as literal as sleep, and look at it as, you know, just resting and backing off and just taking a moment. If you, you know, you're very obsessed with a certain goal or whatever, remember that you also need time to just sit and contemplate and recognize that no matter what you've got going on or that you're aiming for, you yourself are already enough. You are separate from whatever goals you have. You will never be able to increase your worth by credentials or races or medals or money in the bank or, you know, business success or even, you know, relationship success. You cannot increase your value. You are at 100% value all the time, regardless what happens. And I think, you know, don't get so lost in your goals that you don't realize that you are enough, and just rest in that enoughness. It's hard to articulate what I mean by this, but this is something that's slowly distilling upon me, and it's really been such a beautiful gift to understand that finally. I don't have to be striving all the time to prove anything, and this goes back to the ego. I am just enough as I am, and if I need to rest and take time off and recognize, well, you know, I'm going to need extra sleep because I ran extra hard, so something else is going to have to go. That's cool. That's fine, because I am enough. I am always worthy of replenishing myself and being enough. And on the heels of that, I have to say that, you know, another thing I've learned is take time. If you take time to slow down, it will ultimately make you faster. And so what I mean by that, when I, you know, since I've worked yoga into every day, I've had my yoga every damn day challenge of 2019, I've done yoga every day. Since doing that, taking time to slow down and do that stretching, and it is slower than the usual pace of my life, it's, you know, it is this kind of slow and deliberate thing, I am able to run faster, and I'm able to do more. And so if we take time to slow down, we will end up being so much more productive. And that can be as literal as taking time to slow down and do yoga and meditate and rest, or just take time to just assimilate what you're learning, or take a day off of the pursuit of your goals or your studies or your, you know, business or whatever it is. Because ultimately, when you do replenish yourself, you will be able to be so much more successful. It's so imperative. And I really want to kind of push back against this narrative that I see, this punishing narrative that I see in a lot of motivational speakers, and this no pain, no gain. You know, and I did brush on, you've got to push through a little bit of pain and discomfort, and sometimes quite a bit of it. But do always treat yourself with the respect and the wisdom to know that taking time to slow down will ultimately make you faster. Getting sufficient rest and setting aside days to rest. You know, when I see no rest days or no excuses or all these things on Instagram, I just cringe, because it's scientifically proven to be terrible for you and your performance. And in a very literal sense, I found that doing yoga, slowing down, stretching out has ultimately allowed me to go faster. So those are some of the things that I've learned on my long runs that are kind of very relevant to me and everything that I'm doing in my life. And I hope that they were useful to you today. I will try to do a quick, I always promise this, and I have been very bad about it, doing a quick summary for a YouTube video. But I'm hoping to do a few of those this week to catch up on all the ones I've been promising, and to get a few of these points up on my blog and on Instagram. I am oneinchparscary.com, or if you want to follow me on Instagram, I'm Momity Kirsty, or Kirsty Saya on Facebook. I have a public page there. So follow me and reach out. Please share this podcast with anybody you think it would be useful to. Thank you so much for listening. I truly appreciate you spending your time with me, tuning in. I know there's so many options for your time and for your listening, and I really am honored that you would tune in. Thank you so much for sharing this time with me, and I will talk to you again next week. Take care. Bye.